stations promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
The morning show that's on your side. But then again, so is appendicitis.
Get ready for the most popular morning show anywhere on the internet. You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Mia right here on LA Talk Radio. If you'd like to take part in the show today, give us a call at 323-203-0815. And now your program hosts, Sam and Mia.
Good morning and welcome to Thursday. It's August 8th.
Hello.
And this is the best morning show anywhere.
Heck yes.
Number 8 on Talkers Magazine.
Number 8. Woo!
Yes. And all powerhouses, the ones that are on top of us. So it's a good honor.
Yeah.
And yeah. It felt like my birthday yesterday.
Yeah. You know?
Everybody congratulating me and everything. You know, it was a lot of fun.
Aww.
So, so we're famous now.
Yay.
So we have
a... I can call home now and say, I've made it in Hollywood.
No. There you go. You're definitely going to get more attention
every
now.
Every person's dream.
That.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. I know, like now today, it's like, you know, the celebrating, you know, yesterday is over now, and it's like the pressure's on. It's like, oh, crap. We actually have to do really good now. Yeah. Everyone's going to be listening. Oh, no.
There's going to be expectations, right?
Right.
Yeah.
No, it's awesome.
Yeah.
So exciting.
I know. It's pretty cool, you know, and people were congratulating me all day and stuff. And to those who didn't listen yesterday, Talkers Magazine came out with their Frontier 50, which is the top webcasters that they chose. It's pretty subjective, though.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, based on their editorial people and stuff. But, following Glenn Beck and a couple of other people, we landed at number 8. So out of 50,
huge.
That's not a bad deal at all.
Yeah. Yeah, out of 50. Like, that's the thing. It's not like, oh, top 10. You got 8. Like, oh, good for you. At least you made it into the top 10. Like, they got the whole thing. Like, 50. Like, yep, 8 out of 50. So dope.
I know. And it's just a great feeling, you know, to be able to sit on top and look down and kind of, like, see all the people that try to copy and steal from you. And nobody even knows about them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
they fall flat on their ridiculous faces.
There you go.
As he says.
I know, man. That's funny.
The first time I heard that, I'm thinking, what? What is that? What does that even mean? And I'm like, oh, now I get it. Like, legit, they do. Like, ridiculous. Like, not just like, oh, they fall flat on their faces. They're ridiculous faces. I love it.
I know. Greg gets creative with his intros for sure.
Oh, yeah, Greg. Oh, way to go.
So we have a guest in a few minutes. We're going to get to him. I wanted to bring up, are you following the news where this girl was kidnapped? And I guess what happened is there's this family, right, with a boy and a girl and the parents, of course. And they have a friend that was part of the family, like, for years, since their kids were born.
Yeah, family friend, for sure.
Right. So now he went ahead and killed the mother, burned her in the house.
Oh, my God.
They found the body of a child, so it's probably the son. Okay, very young son. I don't know how old he is, but probably 8, 10, something like that. And he kidnapped the 16-year-old girl. And,
oh, my God.
Yeah. And they're saying that... he probably had the hots for her and stuff, and just, you know.
Oh, my God. So he kills
the family. Yeah, so he killed the mother, and the father.
And then kidnaps the girl.
Right. So now the father is, like, you know, revealing this guy and what he's about and everything.
Uh-huh.
So there's still an Amber Alert. I don't
know
if you saw on the freeway, but they look for a blue Versa, I think, Nissan Versa.
Oh, you know what? No. Actually, legit, I got that on my phone.
Really? Somebody
we were trying
told me.
I
to
figure out what that was. It was, Monday night. I'm pretty sure, yeah. I got the alert on my phone, the Amber Alert, and I was like,
I know. Somebody,
I didn't know they
somebody
could
told
that.
Me they got the alert too, and but I never got it, so I don't know about it. Yeah.
Yeah, we all got it. Like, one person was like, what the heck is this? We're all like, I don't know. And then we all look at our phones. We're like, whoa, we have it too. What the heck?
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
What an effective way, huh?
It was Monday night. And then, one of the guys there was like, uh-oh, I drove that car. Are they all going to be after me now? Like, oh, no. He's like, but I swear I didn't kidnap anybody. It's not me. I'm like, okay.
Wow. Yeah, that's a pretty sad story, you know. And the thing is that these kids are so innocent,
yeah.
And they fall prey for these, you know, for these predators. And
it's like you think you know someone, you know, a family friend like that, and then just
right.
Like,
yeah, and the father says he was part of the family, you know.
Oh, God, yeah. That makes me sick.
Yeah, I know.
You can't trust anybody these days.
What's that?
I said you can't trust anybody these days.
I know. When it's your best friend and part of the family, it's it's pretty lousy, yeah.
Well, did you hear about that guy that tried to sell a baby on eBay?
Oh, really? No,
yes.
I've heard of that before, but not now.
So I guess I'm not exactly sure on the story, but I think they actually met through like online dating or something, and she wasn't giving him the attention that he wanted, and she had a kid. And sure enough, yeah, he like took photos and put it up on eBay and was like,
wow.
Child for sale.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then said like in like the description or whatever, said some pretty nasty things.
But does he think he can really get away with this? I mean,
so,
what is that?
I don't know. And I guess one person like responded and I guess they're looking into it because they're like, well, maybe they were just, you know, reaching out like out of concern.
Right.
You know, not legit actually going to buy this baby. But
right.
I mean, yeah, you have to know that, you know, it's going to be traced back to you,
right.
And you're going to get in trouble for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, they're going to get
hello.
Yeah. You know, I mean, at best they'll take the ad down, you know, and that's,
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, the hell with that, man. But I wanted to mention there's a thing here that's part of the, part of a show on CNN. And they're showing this little girl, she's 6 years old, and she has what they call, some kind of syndrome, a rare severe form of epilepsy. So she gets like seizures and stuff, right? Severe seizures.
Yeah.
So the doctors didn't know what to do. They've given her everything. They can't think of anything anymore. And the family decided to try medical marijuana on this girl, right?
Okay.
And she's 6 years old.
Whoa.
But they went for like low THC marijuana, whatever that is. But so I guess her seizures have gone down to one a day from this.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, she'd get like a few.
Oh, wow, that's, okay. That's quite interesting.
Since she was 3 months old, she's had these seizures, man. Can you imagine? It's so scary.
Yeah, it is.
It's really scary.
Yeah, there's like no control over it, and you're just like convulsing it. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So how do you argue with that? You know, I mean, this is like...
Yeah, no, that's...
So everybody go out and get high and smoke weed. It's fine.
The wise words from Sam.
Yeah, there you go. The authority,
thank you.
Right?
Thank you, Sam. Your like public service announcement for the day.
Yeah. Everybody go out, get a joint, get high, whatever. It'll stop your seizures.
Oh, my mom just texted me. She said it was Craigslist, not eBay.
Oh, okay.
That the guy tried to sell the baby on.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mom. Now I know. At least I know she's listening today.
Yeah, now that you're correct. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure she listens every day, because I'm always getting like little like snippets here and there. Like,
really?
Oh, it's actually this. It's like, okay.
Well, she
Mom.
Should call in then. Yeah, Mom, call in, please. You know.
Yeah.
Give her the number.
When she's in town, we'll have her in the.
Okay.
In the studio.
Yeah, but it'd still be fun to talk to her on the phone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's. She's a riot.
All right. Well, we have a special guest in the studio. We're going to bring him in now. And we have Stephen Aaron in the studio. Welcome to the show, Stephen.
Hello.
Are you with us? I know we kind of alienated you for a while there, but you're here.
After all that good news, this interview can only go up, right?
There you go. I mean, you got to stop listening to the news, you know. But I can't stop it. I'm like a news junkie, you know.
Really?
Yeah, two newspapers every day. CNN on TV all day. magazines, Time, Newsweek, all that stuff. You know?
Oh, you still read the newspaper?
Yeah, do you believe it? I love it. I'm reading them as
long. Anybody that reads the newspaper.
As long as they still have them, I'm going to read them, yeah.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, nothing How compares to sitting with a newspaper that smells like ink and paper. And, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Does it get like that glazed look over my face? Like, sure, okay,
yeah,
whatever.
Like,
whatever. I don't think I know what that smells like.
Yeah, I just watch a little CNN Anderson Cooper at night.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Yeah.
Pierce Morgan. Cool.
So, let me introduce you. You're a real estate agent or person, whatever,
yes,
a broker.
Real estate broker with Keller Williams Beverly Hills.
Okay. So you're Beverly Hills, so you're right there where all the nice properties are and everything.
Yes, we sell the entire West Side. We're based in Beverly Hills, but we sell all across the city.
I see. Okay. And so we'll get to that in a little bit. Are you an LA native?
Yes, born and raised.
Really?
Wow.
Born and raised.
Very
I grew up in Beverlywood and then later went to the Beverly Hills school systems.
Oh, really? Where's mm-hmm. Beverlywood?
Beverlywood is just south of Beverly Hills.
Okay.
It's off of like Pico and Beverly Drive.
Okay.
Next to Cheviot Hills.
Right. Oh, yeah, I know that one. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Well, that's cool. So, not a lot of people are born and raised here. You know, we have so many people from out of state and stuff. So that's cool.
Yeah. Do you find it strange at all? Like, I guess you would know because, you've lived here your whole life, but just all the different people that are, like, everyone's here from someplace else.
Well, the city has changed a lot in terms of how it's grown and matured and mm-hmm. gone from really more of a small town feeling to a real sophisticated metropolis. So
really?
I've watched it change.
So it used to have a small town feeling? Once?
Absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Small town.
That.
You could get across town like on a Sunday morning.
Right.
Where you can get across town on a Sunday morning in 15 or 20 minutes. You were able to do that everywhere, anywhere.
Wow, I don't remember that. I mean,
anywhere.
I've been here since 1980. And I don't remember it ever
That's
being
when
like
it
that.
Started. It started in the early 80s with the congestion and the traffic.
Right.
But it's it, back in the 70s.
Yeah.
It was, all mom and pop shops, you know.
Wow.
Even Beverly Hills, Rodeo Drive and Beverly Drive were neighborhood shops, neighborhood places. It wasn't the big tourist attraction that it is now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's it was very different.
So it's a rather late thing with the Beverly Hills Rodeo Drive and all that.
Yeah, it's really the last 25, 30 years.
Okay. Wow. So you've seen a change.
Yes.
You've seen a change. Do you have any siblings?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I do.
Well, a brother and sister.
Yeah,
what
yes,
do you have?
No, I do. I have a brother. Okay. I have a brother. He lives in Palm Springs.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Did you guys get along growing up and everything?
Yes and no.
Yeah.
Yes and no. We he's 6 years older than me, and so we were always doing different things. We were in different stages, even though we did grow up together. So
So it's like almost different generations, huh?
Yes.
I mean, you hang out with the younger people.
Exactly. Yeah. But my parents were from Eastern Europe.
Uh-huh.
So I grew up in an immigrant family that ended up living the American dream.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's exciting. Where in Europe are they from?
My father was Hungarian, my mother was Polish, and my family are all Holocaust survivors.
Right, that's what it sounds like.
And they survived the Holocaust as teenagers.
Wow.
And ultimately came to this country, everyone on my father's side. And like I said, lived the American dream. And one of my personal passions is that I collect 60s Cadillacs.
Oh, really?
And that really stems from growing up, during that time in the 60s and 70s, where it was an event to get a new Cadillac and for they really, really enjoyed life and did a lot of fun things.
That's true. Yeah. We get nostalgic sometimes, but they're saying, when you go back in these times, it's not as nice as we make it out to be, like in the 50s and stuff, people like Leave It to Beaver kind of families and stuff.
Yeah.
But they're saying they used to have their own problems and stuff. So we
Absolutely.
Always look back and say, wow, life was better then and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But
listen, I can remember as a kid driving in the car hearing about the Vietnam War.
Right. Yeah. So you collect Cadillacs, really?
Yes, I have a 60s Cadillac collection, yes.
How many do you have?
I have four.
Wow.
And two or three on my short list. So right now I need to sell a few more homes.
Wow. Wow, that's pretty cool.
That's
so you went
awesome.
to Beverly Hills High? Is that where
I went? I went to private school, and then I went to Beverly Hills High School.
Sounds good. Mm-hmm. And did you meet some celebrity kids there and stuff? I'm sure.
Yeah,
right?
There were a couple. There were a couple of celebrity kids in our class that were in school at the time. And but again, it was, you know, since you grow up with that, it's not that
not
big
a
of
big
a deal,
deal right? Yeah,
yeah,
mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, but you were with the upper crust of society, pretty much, right?
Yes, yes and no. You know, it was a very upper middle class
really
upbringing. You know, so it wasn't anything extraordinary. You know, and some of my aunts and uncles, you know, did very well financially. So, you know, we were all very blessed to have an abundant childhood, and you know, and to also have an appreciation for things because of really having, you know, growing up with the legacy of our family.
Right. Wow. You know, the immigrating from Europe is like so interesting because my dad's family were in Greece. In about 1933-34, my grandfather started getting the idea of the Nazis, you know, taking power and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And he decided to leave, and they immigrated to Israel. Mm-hmm. The part of the family that did not immigrate, they were all slaughtered, you know. It was like a crapshoot almost. You didn't know who was going to die, who's not going to die. And a very sad time in human history, you know.
Well, you know, I do volunteer work at the Museum of Tolerance.
Oh, really?
Here on
Down
Pico
here,
and Roxbury.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And it's an incredible place because not only is it founded on the Holocaust, it deals with all many, many different issues of human rights, civil rights, genocide, tolerance. And there's a man who works there who is a child survivor from Greece.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
And he's on staff there.
Wow. How old is he now, do you think?
He's probably about 70.
Really?
70,
so that's pretty young.
75 at the most. He's probably in his early 70s. Like I said, he was a child during those years.
Wow. Yeah. Not many people have survived this, you know? I mean, all the people that would, all the witnesses of the war and everything, they're all dying off now.
Yes.
So that's why they're documenting a lot of this stuff.
Yes, and that's why I'm so passionate and moved to do volunteer work. Actually, next week I'm being certified as a tour guide.
Oh, really?
And so
we're at the museum?
At the museum, right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Oh, and awesome. So what's incredible is there's so many, if you drive by the museum in the morning during the school year, you'd see buses lined up. Mm. There'll be 7, 8, 9 sets of kids that literally drive on a field trip from 2 hours away to come from all different parts of the city, from the inner city, from all different types of religious schools. And it's just so incredible the work that they're doing in terms of educating people about tolerance. And especially for those children right now, they deal with bullying, which is another form of intolerance.
Yeah.
And so no matter who you are, where you're from, there's a way that you will relate to the museum. And it's an incredible place that I really recommend that everybody go to.
Yeah.
Because I guess everybody check it out.
Yeah, you should. And you know, the thing is that everybody's a minority in some way, you know.
In some way,
So they could probably find something there.
Sure. You know, it's at the end of the day, it's about us all respecting our differences.
Right. Yeah. And that's hard. I don't know if it'll ever happen, but at least in parts of the world, I think people are learning to accept each other, you know. Mm-hmm. Other parts of the world, they never will. So, you know, what are you going to do? So you grew up Jewish here in LA.
Yes.
Right. And did you notice any anti-Semitism or anything when you were growing up here?
No, because
there's a lot of Jews in LA and stuff.
Yes, no, it's I never experienced that.
Right.
And that was never anything that I had to deal with.
Right. And I think a lot of that also is, well, first of all, Americans loved Jews for the most part, or at least compassionate for them. And although it hasn't always been like that. But at the same time, you know, there's always like this strife here, you know, where people are trying to to survive, you know, and then other people just want to kill them or to get rid of them and stuff, you know. So it's so, you know, and that's why I think since the independence, since Israel became independent and stuff, I think it's helped Jews around the world, you know, because now you can't really mess with people like you did in the Holocaust because you have somebody to answer to.
Well, you know, the world's a different place now, you know, where with the evolution of civil rights and now recently what's happened in this country with same-sex marriage, is that we're all evolving, and it's really it's incredible to see. But you know, there by the grace of God go I. It depends on where you were born, what year you were born, and so, you know, I've had the good fortune of being a native Angeleno and growing up, you know, and having you know, a childhood and an experience through the years where I've been able to really be who I am.
Yeah. So you've seen L.A. change and stuff. Do you still like it now? I mean, do you love living here?
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
I would imagine. I mean, you're selling properties and stuff here, yeah.
Yeah, well, I love the city. I think, you know, our city is full of a lot of rich architecture and history. You know, it's really interesting. When I was a kid, if you lived in areas with Spanish homes, those were old homes.
Really?
Those were homes you didn't want. So it was really, if you lived in a house that was built before World War II, it was not a good thing.
Really?
Yeah, if you, anything that was built after World War II, you know, ranch-style houses, modern houses, that was really, really exciting. So, you know, I, as I say, the city's matured. I think we've all matured. We have an appreciation for architecture, for character, for style, and those are in particular the homes that I really love to sell.
Right, and I like when you say that because some people say, well, L.A. has no culture, it has no history, but it does. It just doesn't go back thousands of years.
Yeah, and you got to know where to look for it. You know?
Exactly, you know, and like you said, architecture and stuff is very nice here. Yeah. And so forth. So after high school, did you go to college at all, or did you decide, that's it, I'm in real estate?
Well, I actually, I got a degree as an interior designer.
Oh, really?
And I became an interior designer for 14 years.
Wow.
And
nice.
I did some commercial design, but mostly residential interior design. And then after that, I when Barney's New York opened up in Beverly Hills in the mid-90s. I went to work there and got into the retail end where I managed the home and gift department. And part of what I did at the time was I created a corporate gift service for the entertainment industry as well as a resource for interior designers to come in and use the home and gift department as a place for items and tabletop for their clients.
Right.
So it was really exciting because at first it was dealing with people in their homes. Then it was dealing in the retail aspect of it, but still home related, and then ultimately evolving into working with people on selling their homes.
Right.
Cool.
So you've always been fascinated with that, with houses and homes.
Yes, houses, and also dealing with people on a very personal, important, kind of intimate level. That's another aspect of my business and what I do with my clients is really understand, you know, where they're coming from, what the emotional context of their situation is. Because when you're dealing with real estate, it's really a reflection of life.
Oh,
and
really?
That, you know, it doesn't matter if the market's up or down, is that people always have to buy and sell real estate. Because when you're dealing with residences, it's about birth, divorce, death, more money, less money, job change. So there's always a need for that. So when you say, you know, is the market up or down? To me, that doesn't really matter because there's always opportunity. And it's about what you do with your business and how you make the market and how you have to be flexible and interact with people depending on what's going on in the world. Because if you look back 4 or 5 years ago, there were a lot of unhappy clients. You know, at that time, buyers felt that they were overpaying. Sellers weren't getting the money that they wanted. So nobody was happy. It was a very tough time to deal with the emotions that people had to confront
right.
in order to buy or sell real estate. And so in every market, you have your opportunities and you also have your challenges.
Right.
But part of what's important is that you're really dealing with people in a very intimate, you know, significant
right.
financial
right.
purchase,
as
yeah. well as it's a reflection, because for somebody to actually get up and pack their stuff and move, mm-hmm. there's got to be a really good reason why they want to do
right.
that.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. And I mean, it's their home. Like, it's where
yes.
you go every day mm-hmm. to, you know, relax or throw parties or sleep or whatever. Like, it's not like just, oh, it's just a house. Like, people want a home.
So good realtors are good psychologists.
Yeah, they have to be. I would imagine. I mean, that's the largest purchase many people will
yeah.
make. You know, and it's an emotional one, like you said. You know, it involves a lot. And I can see that. I can mm-hmm. see how you have to be patient with people. You have to be a people person. Now, going back to your interior design, how did you get into that? You were always fascinated with arranging houses and making them look good?
Yeah, I'm a visual person,
uh-huh.
and so I've always been attracted to anything related to that, whether it be interiors, style in general. That's what
right.
I love about my cars, mm-hmm. is that it's sculpture
right.
that reflects a certain mentality of a certain era. So mm-hmm. it's always about visual. That's what I love about making presentations. So that was an early passion of mine at a young age.
Right.
And so it's, you know, one thing has led to the other.
That's cool. I would imagine it's a lot of fun to do that, you know,
mm-hmm.
to actually arrange a house, you know, make it look nice, you know. You only
right.
have four walls and stuff, and then you really give it personality.
Mm-hmm.
And what's been really exciting is taking that experience and applying it to real estate.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And there's two ways that happens, is that I'm able to see things that possibly buyers or even sellers can't see.
Mm.
So to be able to visualize the potential of something. But more importantly, about being visual and about presentation, it's knowing how you have to present a property in order to sell it and get top dollar.
Right.
Right, yeah.
So, you know, today we're doing a lot of staging. We're making sure that properties really look great in order to get that seller top dollar. And what's interesting about it, and something that I talk to my clients about, is that interior design and staging are not the same thing.
Mm.
That what you would do with how you live is different than creating a finished product that
yeah.
is really more like set design.
Right.
Staging is marketing. Mm-hmm. And there are things that you do to create a look and a visual package
mm-hmm.
that you wouldn't do for the way that you live with your family.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So staging means that you set the house, make it ready for sale?
Yeah, staging means that we bring in all the furniture, the artwork, mm-hmm. that we basically go in and completely furnish the house.
Like a model home.
Mm-hmm. Yes, like
right?
a model home. Like
right.
a model home.
Right.
Except in this case, part of what we do, depending on the location of the property, is we want to be certain that we're speaking to the profile of the buyer
right.
mm-hmm.
who's shopping in that neighborhood.
Right.
So where in one part of town, you might do something that's more traditional or something that's more eclectic.
Mm-hmm.
In another part of town, you're going to have something that's sexier.
Right.
And that has more of an edge to it, depending on who the buyer is. So when you're doing a property in Pacific Palisades, it's going to look very different than the Hollywood Hills.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. So so you were doing the interior design for a while. 14 years, you said?
14 years, yeah.
Right. And
then Pretty soon you're going to know how old I am.
Right. Well,
wait, so now
that's usually the case here.
I'm going to add up Barney's in the 90s. Let's see, 14 years. And the next question is, how long have you been in real estate? Right.
Right. And then we'll do the math. You're going to ask something? Yeah?
Yeah, I was just curious. What happens to the furniture after you use it? You just like put it back in a warehouse somewhere?
Well, what it is we work with companies that they have a warehouse, and they bring in a designer that I work very closely with, and tell him exactly or her exactly what I want to achieve. So it's really a collaboration. Right. But they are there are staging companies that have all of the artwork, the accessories, the furniture.
All right.
And so they come in and literally, it's just unbelievable how they do this. They come in one day and totally outfit that house. I mean, we have an empty house one day, stage the next day, photograph the day after that.
Wow.
Because it's those photographs that are the first place that a buyer is going to see the home. They're going to see it on the internet. They're going to see, they're going to get an email from their agent with the property. So we have to make sure that the way that the home shows in those pictures is going to make that buyer say, when can I see this house? When can I get in?
So at what point did you decide I'm going to actually start selling houses?
What point? I would say it was about 12 years ago.
Okay, well, you don't have to give us the years because I noticed you're a little preoccupied here with your age.
At what point?
No, I mean, what made you want to get into that? I mean, you were doing something totally different.
Well, it's interesting. You know, I've always loved real estate, and before I was actually selling real estate, I bought and sold a few properties.
Oh, really?
And I enjoyed that process.
Wow.
And part of what I also enjoy is I love the negotiations.
Really?
I love the strategizing. Mm. And I'm the broker of record for Keller Williams Beverly Hills.
Really?
And so what I do, in addition to my real estate practice, I counsel our agents to make sure that they're in compliance, that they stay out of harm's way. I deal with dispute resolution. And so it's really, really exciting because part of what I figured out is that I'm really a frustrated attorney.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. And at the end of the day, what that means for my clients is that I know how to protect them in a transaction.
Right. Which is important. I mean,
very important.
You're an agent on their part. And
Very important. You know, we're fiduciaries for our clients.
That's what I was going to say.
And so fiduciary means that we put their interests
first,
above all,
right,
and above our own.
Exactly. Yeah. Because you represent them and they need to trust you.
Yes.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about the housing market. You said there were a few bad years, a few slow years, a few years ago and stuff. How are things looking now? I mean, like, let's say nationwide first, what are you seeing?
Well, in general, we're seeing that there are a lot of areas that where there's low inventory. And what that means is that there's fewer homes on the market.
Right.
And what that does is it can create a seller's market.
Right.
Because a market is made out of supply and demand.
Right.
So what that means is that you have more buyers, less properties available.
Right.
And so that is why we've
seen... You meant less buyers.
No, more buyers. We have less properties and more buyers.
Okay.
More buyers.
Okay,
because
I'm
it creates competition.
Right, I'm sorry. So there's less supply. Okay.
There's less supply.
I'm sorry, I'm like
right.
totally confusing him.
Yeah.
He's going to sound dumb in a minute.
Wait a minute. What did I say? So low supply, high demand.
Right.
Yeah, low supply, high demand.
Right.
Which puts upward pricing pressure on the system.
Right.
And that's why we've seen. I mean, we've all read it in the news.
Right.
That the real estate market has gotten healthier, and that we're seeing prices go up. And that's why. And part of what's also happened is the reason we had so much inventory was because there were so many distressed properties as a result of
the credit crunch and
Credit crunch and the
economy,
fact that the fact that our economic breakdown was about real estate. So this was the first time that real estate was the eye of the storm.
I see. Okay, so that's what started the
recession. That's what started the recession.
Wow.
So, you know, it's never happened quite that way before, where it was the real estate market that really changed the economy because of all of the, you know, the bubble burst and all the bad loans that were made right. and people walking away from their properties. And what ended up happening as a result of that were all the foreclosures,
right.
short
yeah.
sales. So the market became flooded
right.
with more properties, then less people being able to get loans.
Right.
So then the supply and demand went the other way.
Right. And
so
the prices went down.
Went down, right. So, you know, market, it's uncomplicated. It's supply and demand.
Right.
And that's what makes a market.
Right. No, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, so the prices went down and people lost quite a bit of money, right, on
yes.
the value of their houses
yes.
and stuff. What about those that stayed in their house? Did the values go back up now?
Yes.
Really?
Yes, yes.
So
values have definitely gone back up. In fact, we had a client in Los Feliz who we started off representing the seller,
mm-hmm.
and it started off as a short sale. And
okay.
a short sale is when you owe more money than the property's worth and you're asking the bank to take a haircut.
Mm.
You're asking the bank to sell the property short.
Right.
So it was a very long process. We were involved with dealing with the bank for, I don't know, 6, 7 months, 8 months. And this was during the time that the market turned around. And then at the end of the day, we didn't need it to be a short sale. My client was able to get out of the property.
Uh-huh.
And we actually recently sold him another property in a new development right in the heart of Hollywood.
Uh-huh.
And so that is what happened, is that the prices came up.
Right.
We had new comparable sales to be able to justify a price, and we sold the property without having to short sell it because of the market shift.
Nice, nice. Wow. So business is better for you now, right?
Well, you know, I've been really fortunate. My business has been good all the way through.
Nice.
And I started working with investors.
Mm.
See, in every market, there's opportunities. So investors came in. They were buying distressed properties, buying properties at the steps of the courthouse,
mm-hmm.
at the bank auctions. And then I developed relationships with investors where we would flip the properties.
Mm-hmm.
So here in a bad market, these investors were making money
mm-hmm.
because they were flipping properties, buying these distressed properties at low prices, renovating them,
right.
staging them, giving these buyers a tremendous value. And so during those years, and still to this day, I have a nice portion of my client base is investor clients. And so so it's interesting. Again, there's opportunity in every market. So when you talk about the market being slow or not slow, from my point of view, it's really about how we've had to change how we do business.
Mm. Yeah.
And that as realtors, we have to adapt.
Right.
And we have to be very in tune with what the market is doing.
Right. Yeah. So some of the... I was going to ask you now, prices are... Are they kind of high
You're
now?
You're not going to ask me how old I am?
No, not yet. We're leaving that for the end.
For the end, okay.
Yeah. We'll let Amy figure it out.
She's okay.
She's had a whole hour here to do the math, you know. But so prices are high. What do you recommend to some people that are like first-time buyers,
mm-hmm.
Maybe don't have great credit, maybe they don't have a lot of money for a down
payment?
Good question. Do they stand any chance of getting a house?
Well, first of all, any buyer that any good realtor is going to make sure that they get their buyers pre-approved in advance before you even put them in the car.
Right.
Because A, you want to know what they can afford.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and B, you don't want to miss any opportunities. You don't want to show someone a house that's too expensive that they can't afford, or not show them the right house because you don't know which way to steer the ship.
Right.
So that's first. And today there are a lot of cash buyers. There's a lot of, depending on the price point, depending on the neighborhood, there's a lot of competition with cash buyers.
Really?
And a lot of these investors
right.
pay cash. So if
right.
it's a fixer property, if it's a property that needs work. So what's really important is that the buyer be pre-approved.
Mm-hmm.
And that they enter the process of buying a home with confidence. Mm. Another thing that's really important is for not only for them to get pre-approved, but to actually get a formal approval. So then they have the option of potentially dropping their loan contingency. Because in a deal, you have these various contingencies where a buyer can cancel. But someone coming in with cash or someone that feels financially confident is going to be able to compete, because what they're doing is they're presenting an offer to a seller that has less risk.
I see.
Right. Right.
So the cleaner your offer is, chances are the better it's going to stand out because there's competition.
Right. So people actually pay cash for houses? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Like $1 million or something. They
all day long. It's unbelievable.
This town is full of money, I'm telling you.
And more.
It's just not in my wallet, though. Yeah. Maybe eventually, you know, I don't know. But there's a lot of money in this town.
Yeah, there's a lot of money in this town. And so it's really important that a buyer pick the right agent. It's important that they have good chemistry with that agent. And like you said, that they have a sense of trust.
Right.
And picking the right agent means that they're an agent that has a good reputation in the real estate community.
Right.
Because, you know, when I'm a listing agent and I have several offers to choose from, I look at who is going to be on the other side.
Really?
Do they have a good reputation? Right. Are they a deal maker? And we will pick. In fact, the week before last, maybe 2 weeks ago, had one of my investor clients ask me, out of these offers that we have on the table, are there any of those agents people you want to work with?
Really?
Yes.
Wow. And because it helps the deal, obviously.
It helps the deal out.
Right.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely. And there were, out of four offers, there were two.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Wow, that's pretty good. So you cover what areas? Like Beverly Hills, you said the West Side?
Yeah, the West Side, Beverly Hills, Westwood, Beverly Wood, the right. Hollywood Hills, West Hollywood. Right. We do a lot in the Grove area, Beverly Center, Miracle Mile. We're kind of all over the place. You know, there are some agents who specialize in one little particular area. And, you know, we do the whole West Side, but like I say, a lot of our sales have been in the, you know, around the Beverly Center, around Beverly Hills, in Beverly Hills, south of Beverly Hills. You know, it's great to be in an office where I'm kind of located right in the center of all these neighborhoods.
Yeah. That's true, yeah.
Yeah, well, so, everybody wants that 90210 zip
yes,
code.
They do.
So I'm sure you were able to find yourself a nice house too, right? What part of town do you live in?
Well, I actually have two homes.
Okay.
I live in a French Normandy character duplex right near the Grove.
Really?
In Fairfax Village, which we used to call the Borscht Belt.
Yeah.
But it's not that anymore. And actually,
wait, it used to be called what?
The Borscht Belt.
Borscht Belt?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
It's Borscht is a... Eastern European cold beet soup, which is terrible. I hate it.
Oh,
and it was a
beet soup.
Beet soup is what it is. It's terrible. And so that was this is like where Los Angeles has changed, is that a lot of the old Jewish people who couldn't afford to own that rented lived in that neighborhood around the Fairfax area.
Oh,
and now it's become the hippest neighborhood around. It's so fabulous. You should see what's going on Fairfax.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I live
near Fairfax.
Yeah, well,
I'm like 5 minutes from the Grove.
Yeah, well, right on Fairfax between Beverly and Melrose, I feel like I'm in San Francisco in some really hip, gritty neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable how it's changed. And so that area has a lot of character properties. There's a lot of people walking on the street and people walking their dogs.
Yeah.
And it's really a neighborhood, and all the wonderful restaurants on Beverly Boulevard as well. So I, for the first time in my life, am having an L.A. urban experience, which is something I've never had. I literally can come home and not get in my car and go. I can go to Erewhon and get my groceries. I can go out for a glass of wine, have dinner, you know, go to Cantor's.
Yeah.
I love Cantor's Deli.
Yeah, so what's interesting is, as we were talking about before, growing up in L.A., my whole life I've never had this urban experience as an Angeleno.
Oh, wow.
And then I have a second home in Palm Springs.
Oh, really?
Yes, and so out there.
That's where your brother lives, right?
Coincidentally, yes, yes, that's where he lives. And I live in a mid-century modern complex that was designed by Palmer and Kreisel. And Palmer and Kreisel were the architects for Alexander. Alexander Homes are, Alexander was the developer who really essentially created that mid-century modern style for the masses.
Really?
And built up some of the most popular, developed some of the most popular areas of Palm Springs in the 50s and 60s. And so they're actually, he's still alive. Bill Kreisel is still alive. He's in his 80s. He still lives in the same house that he's that he built in Brentwood in the 50s.
Yeah.
And so here's a man who was just a worker bee and really worked for developers, who now is getting all this recognition for really being an important influence in mid-century modern architecture for the masses that that we all grew up with. So we have an architectural place. And it's just so much fun to sometimes I'll just by myself, I'll take two of the Cadillacs and I'll park them on the driveway and I'll stand back and I'll say, I'll pretend it's like 1968.
A nostalgic man. There you go.
Yeah. Well. So so having that balance, you know, as a real estate broker, business is intense and I make sure that I live a balanced life. And so I decompress. And, you know, work from remotely also from the desert, but being in that environment out of the congestion and the traffic of the city, you know, I recharge my batteries.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it is, I would imagine it is challenging because you don't have like a regular paycheck. Sometimes you can go months without selling anything, right?
So yes.
It's, but I guess you got to love it, you know, you got to love doing this.
You do.
Yeah.
You do. It's a business that is not for everybody.
Right.
You know, but the one thing that's so exciting about the business is that every transaction is different.
Really?
Every the principles different are people, different. The different property's house. Different. And every deal has a problem. Every deal there's a problem to solve and it's never the same.
Really?
Yeah. And I love that. That's what makes it exciting and interesting. And, you know, you're always learning.
Sounds good. Well, Stephen, tell people where they can find you if they want a house, if they want someone to point them in the right direction.
My website is StephenAaronRealtor.com.
Okay.
And I am located at Keller Williams, Beverly Hills.
Right.
And our office number is 310-432-6588.
Great. And I see you've got some beautiful houses here all over the place. Wow.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
For me it'll probably remain just a dream, but what can I do?
And then at also least... you can see me on HGTV Selling LA.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
I'm one of the agents on that program, and so
really,
yeah, you know, I if you go on my website, you can see episodes. You can also look me up on YouTube, put in Stephen Aaron Realtor,
right,
and you'll be able to see some of my episodes.
And you get
on
pictures
there.
Of That's your Cadillacs awesome. Here and everything, which is amazing.
Right.
You know, I mean, you've really got some nice cars. Now, why Cadillac? Why?
Because when I grew up in the 60s and 70s, with my parents living the American dream, you know, that was before really we had BMWs and Mercedes and Jaguars and these European cars.
Right.
Cadillac was it. Cadillac was the most stylish, expensive, beautiful car.
Right, prestige.
And it, and it meant that you made it. It meant that you arrived.
Right.
And so it was always very, very, like I said, a happening, an event where one of my aunts and uncles or my parents got a Cadillac. So, and they're beautiful cars, and the way the detail, the design, you know, now looking at them, they really exemplify the era.
Wow.
You know, it's Mad Men. It's Mad Men.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true all over again. Stephen Aaron, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Everybody check out StephenAaronRealtor.com and you'll find some of the houses and stuff that are being listed. You gave us a wealth of information. I appreciate that. I always was curious about a lot of the details we talked about today.
Right.
So
thank you for
I'm
having
glad
me.
Glad about that for sure. And Mia, thank you.
Thank you.
I guess it's not Friday yet. It's just Thursday. So we have one more day.
We'll see you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
You have been listening to Sam in the Morning with Mia, which airs every Monday through Friday from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. If you have a question for the show, or if you'd like to inquire about sponsorship opportunities, please send an email along to sam@latalkradio.com. Sam in the Morning with Mia is a production of LA Talk Radio, where we say what we want.